This is the story of the sad flute, a laughing baby, and a weeping sword. Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And although that may not sound like the setup to a Christmas movie, I am here today to make the argument, two arguments actually, that The Warrior's Way is both a Christmas movie and a criminally underrated film that has the potential to become a cult classic. For those of you tuning in for the very first time, here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. And I need all the time in the world to make my point here today that The Warrior's Way is actually a pretty good movie that was definitely done dirty back when this movie came out. When it comes to making the argument, though, that this is a Christmas movie, I don't need hardly any time at all. This movie, a significant chunk of the time of this movie, takes place on or directly around Christmas Day. There are Christmas decorations. There's Christmas music. I don't know how much more of an argument you need. The Warrior's Way is a Christmas movie. And now that I have infuriated a large portion of the audience, let's get into the real focus of today's episode, proving the fact that The Warrior's Way is actually a better movie than it was originally portrayed to be when it initially came out. Because I think we can all very easily agree, it's a Christmas movie. No questions asked. You should definitely watch it right after you finish this episode as part of your Christmas movie marathon this evening. So The Warrior's Way came out back in 2010, and that is a very important date to remember. That date, that year, 2010, is going to play a big part in a lot of what I have to say about this movie. The Warrior's Way was actually one of the biggest box office bombs of 2010. After its opening weekend, the number of theaters carrying the film drastically plummeted. Just to kind of put it into maybe a bit of a tangible way to think about it when it comes to how big of a box office bomb this movie was, one of the other biggest box office bombs of 2010 was Jonah Hex. You know, the Josh Brolin movie, Jonah Hex. The movie that was literally made for just me. I actually, cards on the table, I actually am a big fan of Jonah Hex, the comic book character, especially some of the earlier depictions of the character, although I do really like a lot of Jimmy Pommolati's work on the character as well. This movie was literally made for me, and it is horrible, but it is financially on par with the Christmas movie, The Warrior's Way. However, The Warrior's Way is a significantly better movie, and allow me to tell you why. First off, this movie has a really good cast. This movie stars Zhang Dongun as Yang. Zhang's name is not going to be something that is immediately recognized by U.S. viewers, although if this movie would have gone over better, it probably would have been, because this was supposed to be his big coming to America, next big Asian action star here in the States. It didn't obviously work out that way, but that doesn't derail his career whatsoever, because he's actually the highest paid actor in Korea. The guy's a big deal over there. He plays Yang. Yang, within the first few minutes of this movie, kills the world's greatest swordsman, therefore becoming the world's greatest swordsman. And he chooses to spare the life of a newborn child from a rival clan that he has otherwise completely wiped out. This infuriates his clan, who decides to hunt him down, finish the job with the child, and also, you know, take him out, because whoever takes him out therefore becomes the world's greatest swordsman. Yang flees to the United States and takes up residence in a small quirky Western town. Yang gets a job running a laundromat for a town that has fallen on hard times. It's a bunch of drunks and circus performers. They're at one point in time when the town was flourishing. It was kind of an entertainment hub, if you will, because there was a circus there. And while he is in town, he befriends a woman named Lynn, played by Kate Bosworth of Remember the Titans, Blue Crush, and Superman Returns fame. Lynn is actually one of the carnies from the circus. She was the be blindfolded, throwing knives at a person, standing against a wall trick. I've been to the circus a couple times. I have never seen that one in real life. Do circuses still do that one? I'm curious. If you, for some reason, are a part of the circus world, please let me know if that's still a thing or ever was a thing that circuses do. You always see it in movies, but also you always see elephants being fed peanuts, and elephants actually don't like peanuts. That was some weird marketing thing that a zoo did years ago without any proof whatsoever. Anyway, back to the Christmas movie, The Warrior's Way. Yang slowly begins to assimilate to his new life. Not that he becomes a weird carny, but he basically begins to soften. He doesn't, he puts aside his past and he embraces his present. He starts to become more of a father rather than just a protector to the child he's adopted that Lynn has named April. He not only is washing the clothes of the townsfolk, but he also goes to work to help bring beauty to this desolated town in other ways. One big thing he does in the movie is he begins to plant flowers and gardens in different areas to try and add some color and some life to this town. But the reason why this town has fallen on hard times and is ransacked is because of a local corrupt individual named the Colonel, who at one point in time ransacked the town, and on Christmas Day shows back up to remind everybody who's really in charge of this area. This then prompts Yang to, for the first time since coming to America, to unsheath his sword. Now, there's a bit of samurai lore, mysticism kind of at play here. You see, his clan is still trying to track him down, but they are waiting for the cries of his blade to call out to them. The souls of the individuals that Yang has killed has been attached to his blade, and every time he unsheaths it, they cry out. So they've been waiting for this cry so they know where he is, and he has sealed it until this point. As a way, he realizes that he has to protect the town, April, and Lynn, so he unsheaths his sword, and his clan, the Weeping Flutes, immediately know, okay, we know where he is now. We need to go get him. Which then results in a big climactic third act where the Colonel returns on the 26th, you know, Boxing Day, the day after Christmas, returns with an even bigger crew to take out this town of losers and circus freaks, only to then also have to deal with the Weeping Flutes who have arrived to finish the job with April and to take on Yang to claim the title of the world's greatest swordsman. But the good news is Yang and Lin have rallied the townsfolk to finally stand up for themselves and to take out the Colonel, along with the help of one of the drunks in the town who has just been kind of meandering in and out of scenes throughout this movie, who just happens to be an expert marksman, played by Academy Award-winning actor Jeffrey Rush. Again, this is 2010, which means we have just come off of the Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy, And it's the exact same year that The King's Speech came out. The King's Speech came out earlier that year. The movie that earned him an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor. Yeah, he's also in this movie. That shows you how wild cinema can be. You can earn an Oscar nomination and be in one of the biggest box office bombs all within the same year. Cinema is wild. But it all works out in the end. Mostly. Yang realizes that as a way to, that in order to protect Lin and this town, and especially April, that once the dust finally settles, he needs to once again wander away, become a Ronin, and just wander and continue to keep walking, as the movie says. Jeffrey Rush actually says that line. He kind of works also as a bit of a narrator at different points in this movie. So it's not for the lack of a great cast, and it's not for the lack of a pretty good plot that this movie was panned. Although I will come back to the plot here in a moment. And I would say it's definitely not because of the major themes that come up in this movie that this would have been panned. This movie really focuses in on how people respond to trauma. Jeffrey Rush's character saw the town be devastated, and he turned to alcohol to numb the pain. He found a coping mechanism, like many people do when they're experiencing trauma and pain. He found a coping mechanism basically to just hide himself away from the pain. Then there's Kate Bosworth's character. One thing I did not mention, and there is a word I am not going to say, but when the Colonel originally ransacked this town, he attempted to R-word her. She escaped, but he then killed her whole family. So even though Kate Bosworth's character, Lynn, initially kind of comes off as this darling Western girl, basically she is masking anger and pain. And when he returns on Christmas Day to once again ransack the town, she lets her desire for vengeance to take over, and it actually makes the situation worse. Her trauma, she decides to mask and to just fester anger and vengeance until it causes her to make poor decisions. And then there's Yang. And you can look at Yang's character and say, well, he's just running from his trauma. But here's the thing. Instead of seeing it as running from his trauma, running from his past, I think Yang is supposed to be an example of processing trauma. He sees the pain and he processes it. He takes his time. And on the back end of the processing, he learns to love, he learns to trust, and he starts to work to transform the area around him. And I think in our current age, where this, you know, I am a part of the mental health community, so I'm willing to say these things. And, you know, I guess I do apologize, but if you are upset by what I'm going to say, but I think this is something that needs to be said. Sometimes I think social media and our platforms, quote platforms, allows us to stay in the pain and the trauma as a way to platform to talk about it rather than to truly process it and to, as Yang does here, learn to trust again, learn to love again, and to be a positive change agent in the lives of other people and to beautify spaces as a result of it. And he has to leave again at the end of the movie. He protects, because even though they defeat the Weeping Flute, basically Yang is still the world's greatest swordsman, so there's still going to be people who are going to come after him. So to protect those he loves, he leaves again to continue to process his pain and his suffering. So this movie thematically, I think, is a great challenge to, like, how are we processing our pain? Are we sitting in it? Are we coping with it? Or are we processing and growing and then transforming lives around us? That's honestly a big motivation for how I do my job as a ninja coach. Of like, I know that this is kind of a thing you hear sometimes in coaching spaces, sports coaching spaces, of who was the kind of person that you wish you had when your students was, when you were that age of your students? Like, who is somebody that you wish you had? And that's kind of a something that is present on my mind when I need to have, like, serious talks or how I engage with my students. So I don't think it's from a lack of a story or a lack of a good theme or a killer cast lineup that this movie was panned. And honestly, again, the movie is in 2010. So other movies that came out right around 2010, if you want to take a bit of a trip with me, in the late early 2000s and in the early 2010s, you have movies like 300, Watchmen, Sucker Punch, the Sherlock Holmes duology. You have Ninja Assassin, Bunraku, and Priest. All these movies that are, like, hyper-stylized, surreal. You know, there's kind of a little bit you can maybe see as, like, a gimmicky use of CGI. And that's present here with The Warrior's Way as well. All that is to say that when it comes to The Warrior's Way, how it is visually depicted, I think this movie therefore becomes, for us old folks, a bit of nostalgia. I was in high school or middle school when all those movies I just named off came out. So, like, for me, when I go back and watch any of those movies, yeah, they might not be, like, amazing films, but it feels nostalgic. And that also means then that there's going to be a whole generation of younger film bros who rise up and either find all of those films, like, unbearable, or they're going to see it as, like, these super unique artistic takes on the action film genre. And it's so refreshing as opposed to all the other works at that time. Sips loudly from a double IPA. So why is it a bad movie? It's not necessarily a perfect movie, don't get me wrong. If you're here for the Jeffrey Rush stuff, just so you know, he's not in it a ton. He doesn't have a lot of screen time. It's almost like he was making another movie at the same time. And there are points where Kate Bosworth's character comes off a bit more as a caricature than a character, but that might just be the fact that, you know, she's masking a lot of how she actually feels in this movie. And there is a weird, I shouldn't say weird, but maybe a bit of a unexpected tonal shift in this movie. When you get to the third act, it stops being like this, it still is like this very hyper-stylized film, but where it was like a little bit more drama-focused in the first two-thirds of the film, the final third takes on almost more of like a quirky, almost campy vibe. It's like it switches from a Zack Snyder film to a Robert Rodriguez or Stephen Chow movie, which, don't get me wrong, I love Robert Rodriguez and Stephen Chow. I like both of them more than I like Zack Snyder. Snyder's like further down my director's list. But it is kind of a sharp distinction all of a sudden. Here's an example. So in this, like, big showdown between all these groups, the colonel's men have, like, one of those old-fashioned machine guns, and they're shooting at the white flute, or excuse me, at the weeping flutes. But one of the samurai gets past the gun and cuts off the arms of the guy shooting it, and the gun falls to the ground. But the hands were clenched, so the gun continues to shoot and kills all the other men who were standing right there, of who were part of the colonel's group. And it just felt a lot like a Robert Rodriguez movie all of a sudden. Then again, I like Robert Rodriguez, but it's kind of a hard shift. And I will say, if you're more into the old school kung fu 70s films where it's action scene, action scene, action scene, action scene, plot, action scene, action scene, action scene, plot, this movie is going to drag for you because it's more drama focused in the center of it. Again, Yang's not using his sword. There's not a lot of action until the third act, when it is incredibly violent, and oh my gosh, there is some great sword scenes here with Yang. Great stuff. So why was this movie so hated? Well, apparently when you go back to when this movie came out, critics and fans panned this movie for being too cliche, it's too East meets West. But here's the thing. That's literally the genre. East meets West films, especially this like East meets Wild West films, is a whole subgenre of the martial art media world, whether it's kung fu or samurai. We didn't really get a ninja stuff until the 80s. Ninjas apparently did not show up in the Wild West. That was more, they preferred the 80s for whatever reason. I actually found a documentary that I might try to get in contact with somebody to kind of work with that a bit. But anyway, I got to start wrapping this up. I'm not taking on a bunch of challenges here at the end of the year. So this movie was panned for it being too East meets West. You know, you have the wandering Ronin samurai meets the, we got to rally the town folk together to take out the bad guy who has decimated our Wild West town, which is literally the plot of one of the world's greatest westerns of all time, The Three Amigos. God, I love that movie, but that's also like the plot of that movie as well. It was too cliche for audiences and critics at the time. But here's the thing, and I feel like I've been saying this a lot lately on the show, where it comes back to who's the person directing. Now, I actually like this movie as opposed to, you know, Ninja Vengeance, where I was like, God, this movie needs a lot of help. But here's the thing. If it's too East meets West cliche, unless it was Quentin Tarantino making the movie. If this was Quentin Tarantino making the movie, first off, I probably would have liked it way less than I do now. But second, now all of a sudden, it's not too cliche. Oh, he's just playing tribute to one of his favorite film genres from the past. It's 2010, folks. Why are we criticizing this film for being too cliche? It's just playing homage to a bygone film genre. We were perfectly fine with that with Shanghai Noon. Granted, it leaned more into the comedy with that movie. But seriously, that's the reason why this perfectly good Christmas movie was panned, because it's too cliche. Here's the thing. And again, this is why I think that The Warrior's Way could become a cult classic. It's not right now, but I think it could be. It's available on all the free streaming sites. I watched it on Roku, by the way. So you can very easily find it streaming anywhere. So it's easily available. But also, all the other things I just got done telling you about the cast, the plot, the style, the themes, like it's great. Like, it's got a lot going for it. But here's the other thing. Christmas movies have a tendency to, you know, become cult classics. It's a Wonderful Life is arguably one of the greatest cult classics of all time. It's right up there with Rocky Horror Picture Show, which are two very different movies. But when you go to look at reviews now, when you go to look at reviews on Rotten Tomatoes or on IMDb's, and you look at the IMDb, and you look at reviews from the present, from recent history, what people are saying is, you know what? We kind of did this film dirty. I don't understand why people didn't like this movie. It's good. It's solid. So I really do think that at one point in the not too distant future, we could be looking back at The Warrior's Way and saying, man, we really missed the boat on this one. And honestly, you could even do a highly unnecessary 20 years later sequel with this movie. April grows up and wants to go find her adopted father. There you go. There's part two. It is a possibility. And if they do, I hope they continue to embrace its heritage as a Christmas movie and that it does better. And if not, if there is no unnecessary 20 years later sequel, I will still be happy. Not everything needs a sequel. And maybe this movie just needs to be appreciated for its own 2 feet that it's standing on. Boy, I need to wrap this episode up. So, would I watch The Warrior's Way again? Yes, absolutely. Would I buy a physical media copy of it? Sure. Like I said, it's very easy to find on free streaming, so I don't feel the need to go out and get it. But I want the record to show that I'm one of the real ones. I'm one of the ones who sees this movie for what it is, a very good, enjoyable samurai Christmas movie, and you should too. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you haven't yet already, please rate and review this show wherever you get your podcasts. Pass this episode along to a friend and check out the other great shows here on the Anna Zhao Ministries podcast network, like Systematic Geekology, The Bible After Hours, and my sister show, My Seminary Life, where I recently have been going back over year by year, revisiting the most downloaded episode of each year of the show. You can also follow Kung Fu Pizza Party on Instagram at Kung Fu Pizza Party and on Letterboxd, Kung Fu Pizza PRTY, where you can get a review of the episode before it comes out. And check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, a place for faith and pop culture. I will see you all next time. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I've delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and served up some wisdom one slice at a time.